The number of people who've already told me that they don't eat fish is quite... I mean, it must be a higher percentage in here than in the general population.
I'll make up for that.
You'll make up for it. There's six fish, because I didn't want you to think that there was five fish and we were on that story. Okay, there's six fish. Okay. What I just want you to try and... we're just looking at the story, which happened after Jesus had risen from the dead. So it's about a week after Easter for us, and I just wanted to sort of get into the frame of mind. And then I feel that, about what's happening with the disciples a little bit after the resurrection, and the fact that there was a lot of doubt and they weren't quite sure what was going to happen and stuff. And I've tried to sort of put together something that will hopefully help us sort of move forward. So as I've started to look at this story, because the story roughly is that the guys who are fishermen go out fishing and don't catch anything, and then there's this guy who they see on the seashore who says, put your nets on the other side, which of course for a fisherman is, you know, it's only 2 or 3 metres away from where they've been fishing. Water here, water there, it's the same water, but they then catch a lot of fish and then they realise it's Jesus. And Jesus has already done quite a lot of preparation, like I have this morning. When you read the story, it all focuses on the disciples and the fact that they've decided that life is too bad now, the person they were following has gone, and it's all pretty bad, and they don't know what's going to happen. It's almost like really losing your job, or you know, somebody very important in your life dies, you have a life-changing experience. That's really what it is. And you wonder, what am I going to do? And these guys were in that position. They were wondering what they were going to do. And I don't know about you, but what happens if you start to wonder and get into that situation is that you begin to say, well, what served me well previously? How have I earned my money previously? How have I been able to live and survive previously before this? And you tend to go back to it. And this is what the fishermen have done. And they've gone off fishing. Okay, but Jesus has taken... So the focus is on the story of those guys. But actually, Jesus has had to... he's had to get some fish. It's early morning. Did he get fish there and then? Or did he prepare the day before? He's had to make sure there was some wood on the beach. He's had to get a light. You haven't got a little cigarette lighter or anything there, so I don't know how that worked. But it's taken quite a while for Jesus to actually get this all gathered together to just be cooking some fish on the beach. And probably they're going to burn if we're not careful. I need probably somebody to help me turn the fish over, Greg. and don't forget... I will try and post up, by the way. I did actually look on YouTube as to how you grill fish on a barbecue, and I discovered this, the first YouTube thing. It was absolutely hilarious. Well, I thought it was hilarious. It's a very sort of old sort of guy who's trying to tell you in a very twee way how to do this. And, oh dear. That didn't happen on the YouTube. Greg, you've burnt the fish. Maybe one side is going to be okay, maybe the other. I don't know what's happening. Oh, dear. That wasn't in the plan. I'll try and paste that video up. He shows... Here's the sprig of rosemary with the olive oil to... That came off the YouTube thing. I don't know if Jesus did that. I haven't got a clue, but it was on YouTube. And it looks very...
Just pull it on, Greg. She won't see you.
So, we're going to have some of this fish in a moment. Do you think it's cooked? Yeah. Right. Sue, where are you? Sue Reeve. Come on, not Reeve, Sue Canning, sorry. Can you sort of...
I don't know. Put
them on this?
Yeah, we'll put them on there, and then we'll chop them up a little bit. And... For those of you that don't like fish, you know, we're tough. There's nothing... There's something that hangs in our kitchen. It says, the menu for today is take it or leave it. That's it. So That was where Jesus was. I guess he already knew they ate fish. So they're going to chop it up and you're going to give them a napkin and we're going to work that out some way. Okay. As we do that, Ian's just going to read the story. That looks good. My mum always used to say when she burnt something that carbon was very good for the digestive system. And I've always believed her, but I'm not sure it's true. So you are going to get a little taste of fish, hopefully, because Jesus begins to do something that's very intentional about what Jesus does here. So let's just read the story in and we'll see where we get to with the fish and we can talk over afterwards.
Afterwards, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea in Galilee. It happened this way. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have enough room for the books that would be written.
Thanks, Ian. I just wanted to pick up something because in this whole thing, Jesus has been quite intentional about doing something to change the direction of what the disciples have decided to do. So they decided to go back to their old ways of doing things because what they thought had happened has ended. Okay, and Jesus is saying, no, it hasn't. There's something I need you to do. And right at the start of the Gospels, Jesus says to the disciples, follow me. And they, at that point, they have no idea what it really means, but they think there's something about this guy, Jesus, and so they do follow him. But now, Jesus says, follow me. And they've just seen him die, and now they're witnessing that he's resurrected from the dead. And he says, follow me. What on earth would be going through your mind if you were one of the disciples? When you've just seen the guy you're following die, you think it's all over, but it's not, because there he is again, and he says, follow me. I just think he must be saying, if I was sitting around the fire and eating the fish, I'd be going, oh, I think, crumbs, that's quite hard, that. I'm not sure that I do want to follow him because he's just died. Is he talking about that? Or is he talking about being resurrected? Or is he just talking about the way he does things? Or, is he calling me to die? Is he calling me to be resurrected? What does this mean? And I'd just be starting to think about that. I guess you guys would too. It would just be going through your head, wouldn't you? And you'd be eating the burnt fish. And I do wonder if Jesus was like Jamie Oliver or whether he was, you know, like my mum, you know, who occasionally burns stuff and that sort of stuff, you know, thing. So one of the things that I find interesting, though, is this, that Jesus just cuts in. So we've sung, I was listening to the songs this morning, singing them, and it says, come, Lord Jesus, okay, and we are to come to him, he is to come to us. But how does he come to the disciples? He just appears and says something that's completely a bit off track. So he's getting us back onto his track, not onto ours. Are we done with the fish now?
Yes.
Great. That's okay, we'll just leave it at that, I think. Yeah. Isabella will give hers away because she doesn't eat fish. So is there one last...
What about you, Andy?
No, I'm good, actually. I've seen what I do.
You can't do that. You're not allowed to. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not following Jesus, then, are we?
No. We're not following me, anyway, all right? You're following Jesus, don't you? Here's the thing, right, is that Jesus sees that Peter and the guys have gone off fishing again. They've gone back to what they know. But he's saying, no, I want you to do something else. Okay, and then he says, feed my sheep. Okay, and I've always wondered about what that means because, you know what it means, I suppose. But it's quite an odd thing to say unless you understand that Jesus is actually saying, well, you were fishing, and I have told you I want you to be fishers of men. You've gone back to your fishing, but actually, you know, so you've known what I've called you to, but you've gone you've gone back. But now I'm saying, no, I want you to come back onto this track. So we've had a big momentous event where things have gone all wobbly. and it's really wobbled off course, and you're going off that way, but I actually want you to go this way. Now, I've got a question for you that I'd like you to have a little think about, really, because and talk amongst yourselves. Who do you think you could take care of? Peter is asked and told, take care of people. Who is there in front of you who you could take care of? Okay, so just turn to the person next to you and say, who is it that God, Jesus might be asking who I should be taking care of? Okay, now, did Peter think that it was going to be his mother-in-law that he was going to be looking after and taking care of? Did he think it was his wife? Did he think it was his children? Or did Jesus mean a little bit more than that? Okay, so bear that in mind as you just turn to somebody and just sort of say, who could Jesus be asking me to take care of? It might be people you're already taking care of in some sort of way, or it might be that you've been thinking about something for a while and you want to just sort of tell somebody, oh, well, you know. So it's a difficult question, deliberately asking the same question, really, as Jesus. So I'll give you a couple of minutes on that. Okay. Right. Does anybody want to does anybody want to share what's been said? It's all right. Are you okay? All right. Anybody want to share what's been said? Found it challenging and they thought, oh, you know, or they just, it's just ordinary. What is it? What have the answers been?
Well, Tina said a good thing,
didn't you? Well, you tell us, Brenda.
Care for who crosses our path.
We care for who crosses our path. Okay. All right. Have people named, has anybody named people whilst you've been talking? So, Rosie, you've named people, and Sue has, other people have actually named people who I ought to be taking care of, okay? Has anybody gone outside of their family in terms of, you know, taking care of people? So some people have gone outside the family. Okay. Has anybody gone to taking... Has anybody mentioned taking care of people you don't yet know? Okay, one or two. Yeah, okay. Interesting. That's quite an interesting sort of concept in itself, isn't it? Okay. All right. Okay. I want to just, there's something that it's a very simple diagram, I hope you can all see that. There's just, okay, this here is your comfort zone, okay, and this is where the magic happens. Okay? And I've been really impacted by that. If you Google where the magic happens, you get the images. It's all on the blackboard and stuff. And I think that what we've just been talking about caring for people who, you know, we're just going to have to push ourselves a little bit, it means that you get out of your comfort zone and something begins to happen. Okay? In fact, I told Jenny this. You know, Jenny lives in New Zealand, and she's made a friend in New Zealand who's married, got two or three kids. And Jenny had been, because I'd seen this and I'd told Jenny about it a week or so back. And Jenny's just told me this morning that this young mum, she told about the comfort zone, magic happened. And she'd been thinking about it. She's come back to Jenny and said, she said, yeah, that's happened to me, she said, because I moved from New Zealand and went to London, she said. I was out of my comfort zone. Really out of my comfort zone in London. You know, New Zealand is very, very sort of, even the cities are rural. and you know, you get into London and it's totally different. She'd obviously been out of a comfort zone, but she'd met the guy who's become her husband and she's fallen in love with, and they're now back in New Zealand and living their life and enjoying stuff. And so she said, it's actually happened. And now we're actually talking about Lisa's next step, that she's recognised in her life that if she goes out of her comfort zone, something magic happens. And so I said, well, actually, she'd be out of her comfort zone if she started in spiritual terms. And, you know, because Jenny's already had a bit of chance. She doesn't believe in God or anything. But, you know, the spiritual side of life for Lisa is, you know, something that's not comfortable. And so maybe something else is going to happen. So I was quite impacted by that. And there's a psalm which I think sort of really, really does this. It's Psalm 23, and I view this as a tool. You know, I have toolboxes and stuff, and this is a tool to pick out of your toolbox when life is not going so well, I think. It's, "The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me by quiet waters, and he refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his namesake, and even though I walk through the darkest valley, or the valley of death, or depression, or whatever it might be, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." And then it says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life." And I think that bit, "you prepare a table," is the bit where everything before that, "the Lord's my shepherd, dark valley," this is where we get out of our comfort zone because we're trying to do something and it becomes difficult. Things become difficult when you try to take care of people. You have to die somewhat to serve them. But actually, as you get out of that, the magic begins to happen and your cup begins to overflow and the Holy Spirit begins to well up within you, and then things begin to happen, and then you have to pray about stuff because it isn't happening right, and then other things begin to happen and the magic does begin and we begin to make a difference. So I just thought I'd sort of mention that. Psalm 23, easy for you to have a look at that. I've got another psalm, which is Psalm 19. I won't read the whole thing out, but I'll read a little bit out, because I think this is... Do you know that phrase from St. Francis of Assisi? He says, tell everybody the gospel, and if necessary, use words. Have you heard that before? So, and I've never thought that was biblical until I read Psalm 19. I just thought that was St. Francis of Assisi making it up. You know, sort of, because it's that, you know, because he wanted to say something. But it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the world. Their words to the ends of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun," blah, 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 blah. And so, and I just thought, I won't go on because it's too long, really. But that psalm is saying, if you look up at the stars, they tell you stuff without speaking. And perhaps we have to be like that. And in fact, Paul the Apostle does do that in Philippians. He says, "Shine like stars." And I don't know where we could go with asking the question on this, but what question could we ask that sort of helps us unpack the fact that we should shine like stars and speak without speaking? Obviously we would talk in the end, otherwise over coffee it would be quite dreary, wouldn't it? But you know what I mean? We do have conversation with people, but we also do stuff and say stuff without actually using words. So I think that maybe that would end up, for some of us, like me, because I like using words, it would take me out of my comfort zone. And then maybe stuff begins to happen. Yeah? Little question for you. What do you think God might be saying to you about getting out of your comfort zone? Have a little chat with someone. Turn around this time. Try and talk to somebody different, if you can. And... How might God be asking you to get out of your comfort zone? You might well have to start with, what is your comfort zone? And then let somebody else say, well, what about, you know, I don't know how it'll go. Have a conversation. Are you done? Are you done? You're done? Right. Interesting. I've already talked to somebody here up near the front and discovered something I wasn't expecting, but in discussing where your comfort zone is, immediately you get into the fact that you start to talk about, well, this couple have here, about, well, this is where the magic happens. Has anybody else done that? You've sort of said, well, this is my comfort area, and then by default you've gone, ooh. So, anybody want to share that?
It's a way of defining it, isn't it? Because you think, oh, that was really special when I did that, but I knew I wasn't operating in my normal zone then.
Right. Okay. Anybody else got any comments or want to share what has been said? Is that true?
We were talking about, because I said at work, we always say, out of your comfort zone is your discovery zone. So we're always trying to push each other to go. And then Greg took it a step further, saying they say your comfort zone is your enemy. Because you, I suppose, just taking that principle and taking it a bit further.
So okay.
We were contrasting the two and saying, hey, you can choose to be in one, and then you can revert back to your comfort area.
Okay. So you have to choose to get out of your comfort zone, and other people encourage you.
Because you think, oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
There's also value, though, in spending part of your time in your comfort zone, because if you've got a job where you know that you've got a contract for the next 6 months or something, that bit is a bit of a comfort zone, but that then enables you to springboard. If you know you're going to be with these people for 6 months, you spend time remembering, you know, how many kids they've got, whether they've got a cat or not, and, you know, or you don't, mm-hmm. you know, and building those relationships and going into the non-comfort zone bit. So in some ways, a comfort zone... You won't want to spend all your time out of your comfort zone. You need that to springboard into your...
Right, okay. Yeah. Anybody else?
There's another analogy similar to what Sue's saying. When you step outside your comfort zone, the concept we've got is a former term's comfort zone, adventure zone, and extreme zone.
Sorry, say that again.
Comfort zone,
yeah.
Adventure zone, and extreme zone.
Okay.
Okay. If you go from comfort to extreme, in the context I come from, which is what it is, you have a tendency to collapse because it's too big a step. But if you go into the adventure zone, then you're doing something that's extending yourself.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, your comfort zone extends, and what was adventure zone is now comfort zone, and you can step forward again.
Yeah. So what you're saying there then is that as you step out of your comfort zone, it gets bigger. Okay. Anybody else come up, suggest that? And anything to add? Yeah. Okay. So is this mainly work related, or is it? Does anybody discuss something that wasn't work related? Going out of your comfort zone.
We said about relationships, how it's quite easy to care for the people that we know, but extended, so essentially extending that circle. You said that, you extending the circle to people you don't know is always a risk. You don't know how they react.
Okay, and you were saying that actually that the magic happens for you when you meet new people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, anybody got anything else to add?
Well, I said that doing the 40 acts got me out of my comfort zone because it was a challenge.
Oh, okay.
Just doing something a bit extra.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. Right. Hmm. Do you think that Jesus was trying to do that with the disciples then?
Yeah, because he mixed the metaphors, didn't he? Because they were fishermen, and then he talked about the sheep. So maybe he was consciously...
going from one zone to another and making them think differently. Okay. I've got an image. I suppose it's a sheep image, really, is that... because it's more or less like fields, and we're... our comfort zone is like we're in a field, but Jesus is, you know, Jesus is at the gate and he's going, I've got the gate open, guys, and yeah, it'd be good if you went into another field. And it's a bit like that. So if you can imagine, you've got to go into a different zone, and then you've got to discover new things and new ways of working, and which is what you guys have been talking about. But I've got this, when we went to, I don't know how many years ago it was, we went to Rome, and we went to the big church they've got there. The one, what's that called? That's the one. Yeah. And they've got a big block of white building that's the church thing, and then they've got these two sets of colonnades or pillars and that go around in a big circle. I remember Philippa, where we were there, wherever we were in Rome around that place, she kept going, it's the everlasting arms of God. And what the architect had done was he'd said, well, here's the church, which is God here, and then he's got his arms going around, and they're in a big curve that envelop you. Okay, and or partially so, you didn't meet. So, and I've got this image really that somehow in this story of Jesus, when he's come back to the disciples, I don't know if they've gone off on the ship, they've come back on the boat, he's given them a miracle, but then he's saying, look, guys, you go in the wrong direction, but he's opening his arms up to them. He's not going, there's none of the, look, you've got it all wrong, is there? Do you know what I mean? There's none of that. And why did he choose to do it at that point? Why didn't he stop them going out? Why didn't he do it the night before they went out fishing? Because he knew they were going to go. He probably heard them. I don't know. How do you do that? But why did he choose it after they don't? I don't know. Those are questions that I've still got running around in my head. But there is a sense that he's going, my arms are open. This is going to be a good thing that we do here. You need to follow me, though. And death is, on the track. And we are going to have to die in this, because I've just done that and I'm asking you to follow me again. So he's ramping it up, but he's also saying there's a good thing happening here, and I think that's quite exciting. Does anybody else want to comment? Because we're in a different sort of frame of mind today about talking and not talking, so does anybody want to comment on anything they're thinking about where this is at?
Yeah, I just thought that the disciples were challenged daily, follow them, possibly weekly or monthly or whatever. I think they were challenged daily with what Jesus was doing and how they did it. And I know I would have really struggled, because I would have said, okay, he's performed this miracle, he's done it this way, here's, it's with a blind man, okay, so that's how the rules apply there, and I would have said, okay, I've got it now, we're going to apply those rules for the next day, and then he does something completely differently again, and throws you off.
So what you're saying, are you saying then that basically you'd find that your mind is racing to try and catch Jesus up all of the time?
Yes, yeah.
And I think that this story is a bit like that, isn't it? It's actually, they've decided they're going to do something now. We've planned our way. We're going to go back fishing. We're going to go back to our old ways of doing things because we don't know what else to do. And then Jesus comes along and says, actually, no, I want you to go this way. And there's a lot of thinking to be done.
I think he wants them to learn by their own mistakes.
Right, so
because they've done it wrong. He hasn't gone like that, but he's gone well. He's made the mistakes, now learn from what you've done wrong.
Okay, and he's showing them the other way as well. Yeah, Greg.
I was going to say that when we're this comfort zone and extending it and living in it or living slightly outside it is something which we all as people do from the earliest age. When we're babies, we have a comfort zone, and then we grow up a bit and we learn different things, and we're pushed outside our comfort zone.
Yep.
And we have to walk, and that's outside our comfort zone. Then we have to go to school, and that's outside our comfort zone. And then, you get older and you try and retrench a bit and think, well, I don't have to do all those things now. Sometimes I'll pull back. So maybe the question isn't about where the magic happens. It's about how quickly do you want it to happen? Because it's going to happen anyway. New things are going to happen in life, and you're going to be outside your comfort zone.
Right.
So do you want a little bit, or do you want a lot? How much do you want? That's the question, really. It's not, are you going to do it? It's how much do you want to take?
Okay. What do other people think?
I'm just being a bit impacted by what Jesus actually asked them to do to get out of what he was saying to them. He was going, care for people. It wasn't like, pack up all your belongings, go and, take a ship, go all the way over there, the other side of the world, and make a new movement, or etc. It was a simple thing like go and care for people, which is I know from doing the 40 Acts thing, just showing people a little bit of extra care and love and intentionally doing something did take me out of my comfort zone, but made a big impact on people's lives.
Okay. What does anybody else?
People need to be steered, don't they? Because there's actually a third circle, which is where the pool happens.
Jesus.
Yeah. Okay, let's. That's the poo, yeah? The poo zone.
And so people need steering from comfort zone to where the magic happens, otherwise, you know, just, you know, going off on your own without having some form of guidance.
Yeah.
Can steer you completely the wrong direction with disastrous consequences.
Okay.
So.
Do you need poo for the magic?
No, I don't know, yeah. I mean, you know, Paul, when he's in prison, he might be saying, oh, I'm in the poo now. But actually, well, he was in the comfort zone where the magic was happening at the same time. Yeah. It's all a matter of...
Interesting.
Oh, you've
got the poo. Is it good or bad?
Is it bad?
Now, we're going to go off track now. We're going to need Jesus to bring us back on track. I think that the word steering, though, is important. I think Jesus is steering here, don't you think?
Yeah. Well,
he is steering.
Yeah.
Bob?
Giving direction.
Following is a better word. You know, we sit in our comfort zone. If he wants to get us where the magic happens, he leads us there. He didn't say to us, oi, get up and get off your bum and go and do it. He says, oh, let's go and do that together.
Hmm.
I'll come with you.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
And that's implicit in follow me, exactly. Isn't it? Even at this point. But there's more stuff implicit in follow me, which is he has just died, quite nastily, being killed, really. And then he's come back from the dead. And I think there's still a bit, you know, what's happened here? And then he's saying, follow me. And I think that's fairly underlined that, because there's another bit, isn't there, Ian read, what was the bit about, this is how you're going to die, Peter.
Yeah. When you're old, you're going to be tied up.
Yeah, you're going to, and so, yeah.
I think the relationship with Peter and the restoration in the relationship Peter's side that happens over the fish is also really key, because we're not told of any encounter of Peter from after Peter denied Jesus. We're not told another encounter with Jesus until we're told of this cooking breakfast by the shore. And Jesus meets him in the other way. There is unfinished business, certainly from Peter's side.
Yeah.
But yet Jesus takes the time and spends the time with Peter to ask him again and again to re-establish, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, re-establish where he wants them to go.
Yeah.
And 40 days later, Peter stands up on Pentecost
and goes for it.
And creates 3,000 preachers about Jesus.
Yeah.
You see, I also think that the whole thing of Jesus letting the disciples go off and not find fish and then getting fish is partly him teaching them about hope, because they basically
they'd lost hope. Yeah.
Hope died. Mm. Whereas, come the following morning, he shows them that actually hope's still there, and just go this way. And it reignites.
Yeah.
And therefore, that leads on to Peter being reinstated, leads on to the start of the growth of the disciples and all that sort of thing. So I think that's key to me, teaching about hope.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's sometimes about recognising the opportunity and then being bold enough to go with it.
Say that again, Tina.
Sometimes it's recognising the opportunity and being bold enough to go with it.
Yeah.
Because we do let them slip by.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, hindsight's wonderful, isn't it?
You think,
oh, if only.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just thinking of the fire now. Right, well, we better... Oh, roll.
I just wanted to add on that as well, that, we very often ask for guidance, but... We don't push out, so he can't guide us.
No.
You know, because we've not done anything. Just cutting in.
Okay.
I know I'm guilty.
probably quite a lot of us are. let's just call it a day there, and so maybe you want to have some further discussions about. What Jesus is actually doing with us. Because the thing that I'm trying to carry with this is the fact that, okay, like Sue said, it's about Peter and what's happened with Peter, But the thing is that Jesus is like this with us. He must be like this with us too. He must be. Because he hasn't really, you know, he's wanting us to branch out. Peter is dead, but we aren't. And he's wanting us to do stuff. And so he's wanting us to you know, I feel sometimes I'm looking at a very small portion, and Jesus is actually wanting me to look wider. And that's why I've put the, that's why I like the going outside the circle. And it's great that you're saying, oh, the circle can get bigger as you do it more. And the field is open, and I think there's more for us than we imagine. And Jesus is trying to say, there's more for you, and the more you push out, the more you have faith about pushing out, and don't, you know, the more you go for it, the more will happen, and it will be more exciting. And for whatever element it is for you, that's the sort of... I don't see his open arms as things like gathering in. I see his open arms as saying, there's a lot of stuff for you guys to do, and it'll be great. It'll be really good, but it'll cost you everything. So that's where I sort of feel the thing is for me. But everybody's got some different thoughts to hopefully take away. So do keep chatting about it, and that's cool. And I will. I did have a bit of fish, and it tasted all right. Well done, Greg, and Sue, and Andy. Thank you.